Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 245 of the podcast with Steve Light, author-illustrator of Swap, our March feature book at All the Wonders. We have a whole lot of crazy awesome things included in this month's feature, like a tour of the book with Carter Higgins, a video tour of Steve's NYC apartment studio filmed by Blake Hamilton, and a chance for you to win a hand-drawn piece of art from Swap. You heard that correctly. A chance for you to win a hand-drawn piece of art from Swap. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of you. Head to allthewonders.com for all of that goodness. We love this book and hope that you'll see the joy and wonder in Steve's newest work as well. You know, Steve has come on the podcast now 3 times. Once for Have You Seen My Dragon, a second time for Have You Seen My Monster, and this is the 3rd time back. And every time he joins, I learn something new about him and gain a deeper appreciation for the work that he does. And you're going to find a lot of that nestled into this conversation. Here is episode number 245 of the podcast with Steve Light. Let's get busy. Welcome back to the podcast, Steve Light. I'm super excited, as always, to talk to you.
Hi. Oh my gosh, it's so great to be here.
It's so wonderful, Steve, to have you. Well, really, when this goes up, to have you on All the Wonders, that we get to celebrate Swap. This is a book that I've actually talked to you about for some time.
Yeah, that's right. I know. These books, you know, they're in the works for such a long time. And from when you have an idea to when you're proposing an idea to when you're working on sketches to when you're doing the finish to when it's getting put together and to when it finally comes out, it seems like a long time, but it's all worth it. And so excited to have Swap out in the world.
This is swapping. Yeah, it's a book that you've been, I know how excited you've been to share this story for so long. And I was equally excited when I ran into you in Ohio at the library conference and got to just get my hands on it, let alone take a copy home. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But I mean, man, for all I've known you, your line work is just better and better and more detailed and just, it's insane. Your process and the detail you put in. And in this case, I think that I played with this book a lot of ways that I think kids will play with it, which I want to talk about later. But it was a lot of fun, Steve.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And it's great when these books come from my drawing, you know, and this was just because I wanted to draw ships and started to draw 2 characters that would be on the ship and where could they go? And then I was reading about ships and trade routes and stuff, and I was like, oh, they could just go from place to place and trade stuff. And then the whole idea of swapping and, you know, how kids trade stuff. I don't know how much they do anymore, but I mean, I think they still trade Pokemon cards. Is that even big anymore? I don't know. But, you know,
still bring them into school. Just today,
they did?
Yeah, I had to tell them. I'm like, guys, you're not supposed to bring this in there. The principal will take them away.
So, I mean, I never traded baseball cards, but I traded actually, like, they used to have movie cards from, like, the 70s King Kong movie. And I think we had some Star Wars ones and stuff, and so I used to trade those even collecting stamps and stuff. So, you know, swapping, trading, I think is something that kids always do, or at least for lunches too, right? They trade lunches.
They trade everything. I remember trading things and then my mom saying, "Where is this thing?" Like if I brought one of my, even if it was something as simple as like a Hot Wheels car, where is your red Hot Wheels car?
Oh, wow. Your mom was really good. My mom didn't keep track.
I think there were one or two things. It's locked in my memory. It must have been one or two things that I must have carried around everywhere. Right. So the fact that I ended up suddenly not carrying it, I think became a deal.
Yeah, she noticed. Yeah. Totally. I know. All those little treasures, you know, that you have. Yeah. Everything. So.
Well, so why don't you share what your story, all of those ideas that you have put into this story, what happens in the story of Swap?
Okay, so in the story of Swap, there's, I guess we're calling him a pirate, but he has a ship, and it's an old, broken-down ship, and so he's very sad. And then it's a little boy who's his friend, and they're walking through the bazaar, and at that very moment, he actually loses the button to his shirt, so he's really in bad shape, you know. And the little boy picks up the button, and he says, "Let's swap." And then they wind up swapping all these things that they need to get all the stuff to fix up their ship. So, and they go to all these different places to do that. And, you know, they always get a few extras so they can keep the thing. You know, if they get three anchors, they only need one new anchor for their ship. And so they trade the other two. And the fun part was figuring out where they were going to go, figuring out, and I didn't want, you know, them to just trade anchors for, you know, two guys who had two ships that they needed the anchors for. I was like, oh, they should really trade them. Like, it would be really interesting if the next people that they trade for use these things in unconventional ways. So, like, when they trade the oars, they actually get flags for the oars. And the guy who makes all the flags uses the oars to actually hang the flags. And when they trade for ship wheels, they trade sails. And the guy who sells the ship wheels, he's this big, huge pirate. He's on the cover, and he has all the ship wheels on his back. And he's using two of the sails to, like, hold them on his back. And the people who sew the sails, they use the anchors to actually hold the thread to sew. Yes. And, you know, the thread that goes to the sewing machine and to their needles. And the ladies who make the hats, when they trade, because pirate has to have a nice hat, you know, they have to be accessorized. So when they trade for hats, the women who make the hats use the ship wheel to hang the hats as like a hat rack. So that was really fun. And drawing this like crazy ship that I don't know if it ever would sail, but drawing that and all the like places that they went and these, you know, houses that are built on docks and stuff, and playing with the space was so much fun. And I got obsessed with this blue. So
that blue that runs through all the water, gorgeous blue. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, in Dragon, we use limited color, you know, it was really black and white with the things to count were color, same with Monster. And so with this, you know, we colored the main characters and the things that were traded. And then there's this blue. And I got obsessed with this blue and the shapes that this blue of the water would make. And there's an artist called Ellsworth Kelly who does these big, like, colored field paintings. And I love his work. I love the graphicness of his work. So I actually laid out the whole book first with just what the blue shapes were going to be. And they changed, you know, from those little sketches. But just to see, okay, if we're using this blue in such a flat graphic way, you know, what shapes they're going to make. And I actually have a pagination, a page by page little sketch of what the blue shapes are going to be. And the blue is hand painted by me using Holbein acrylic gouache. It's called Smalt Blue, my favorite blue. And it's all
Smalt Blue?
Yeah, it's all hand painted, even though really, yeah, you could have done it on the computer because it's it's such a flat color, but it really does give it, you know, some dimension. Yeah. And the color is called Smalt Blue, S-M-A-L-T Blue. And it's just a great blue. And so I drew the whole book, So, talking about my pens.
Yes, I mean, I'll really.
A fountain pen. And the characters and the things they trade are colored with fountain pen inks. But the blue is the acrylic wash. It was drawn with a flex nib pen. So a flex nib pen, if you've ever used a dip pen, most of those are flex nibs. A flex nib is the more pressure you press down on the nib, the thicker the line gets. And the lighter the pressure, the thinner the line. So I'm playing with this thick and thin line, which just felt like the sea and, you know, and the boats and everything. And it was just so much fun to draw. I just get so transported to these worlds. And I think that's my greatest joy is when I'm really in the book. I'm in the book, you know. I'm drawing these pictures and I'm really transported to those worlds that I'm creating. And that is just my greatest joy. And I think that just comes from when I was a kid. And that's why I drew, is to kind of escape and get away from, you know, things and just have that peace, you know, when you're in the drawing.
I could see it, Steve. There's so many moments in this story that I do feel like it's almost the evolution of the work you were doing in Have You Seen My Dragon and in Monster. The detail is, it just feels like you've lived in each of these settings a little bit longer. I'm thinking of like when we first come to town, that dock town, it almost feels as if it's a photograph of this town. There's everyone is in motion and it's just captured. There's so much for the eye to look at that you couldn't possibly notice it all in one passing. And like you do in Monster and in Dragon, you do accentuate certain items. And in this case, it makes it really nice for the eye to travel over the items being swapped because you color mark them. We can watch for the certain color from one page to the next. But then everything else is just black and white. And it's so beautiful to get lost in it, especially when you get to that page with the lumber being cut down, with the trees being cut down. This contrast, Steve, of the oars that are just smooth and white and almost just an outline of a shape right beside these logs and beautiful evergreen trees that are so detailed. And then that tractor pulling them away with just these gears everywhere. It's so, so beautiful to look at to the extent too that I think, well, I can tell you that this is what happens with my kids because we've talked about my students before, but we read this book. And then whenever I read a book aloud to the class, I always leave it out during book selection so that they can browse closer, look closer.
Yeah.
And this is just one that it takes you, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes to read, even when you're going slow and talking about the pictures.
Yeah.
But then they just, for all 15 minutes of book selection, their noses are just in your art. And I think, Steve, you've had this experience. You talk about artists all the time. You talk about going to museums all the time. But these children, their art museums are your picture books.
Oh, and thank you. Wow. That's great.
Well, yeah, for them to get their noses buried in them too. Yeah. It's really a wonderful thing.
I love the graphic quality of the black and white line with some color, but I really spend a lot of time thinking about the graphics and the textures and the, you know, what marks and line I'm going to use to convey that thing. So when you're talking about the logs and stuff, yeah, I really, you know, you're picking up on things that I consciously did, which really makes me feel good as an artist and author, because you don't always know if people are going to get those things or think like, well, he just didn't draw the oars as much. Well, no, it's nice to have that contrast of the oars against that texture of the wood, you know, to show that, you know, they took these rough logs and then carve them into these smooth sanded oars, you know, like all those things. And so for you to say that is just great, and for you to say that kids are looking at it as their as art for them to look at is really thank you.
Because
you know, first and foremost, I want to bring art to the world, which is really nice. So
You do it very effectively, and you make it so beautiful to look at. Even like we're talking about your line work, and I even think of like the line work that you do when it comes to the flags, where all of a sudden your line gets really, really light.
Yeah.
And it just lifts the art. Suddenly it just feels like there's a transparency to it, like there's a lightness to it. But
those,
what is
nylon? Yeah, the
yes, that's flat, what I mean. Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you. Yeah.
So there it is. You get it. You execute your art so well that it's just, well, of course that's why it looks this way. This is what Mr. Light's trying to tell
us. It's not about like, oh, this is how I draw and I use this one kind of line to draw everything. Well, everything's not the same. So, you know, within the way you're conveying your story, you should be able to use different line and different texture and different graphics to convey how things feel. And so you picking up on the lightness of the flags and stuff, again, something consciously that I thought of how would you draw these? How would these feel, you know, and what kind of line am I going to use to convey that?
Well, those are the things that I think about when I approach my students too, Steve, and now even more so because you've affirmed them that I can go back to them and say, you know, when you noticed that the line was thicker here, or when you noticed that that it felt lighter, that all of those were intentional because of, you know, how it's supposed to make you feel, or how it's supposed to make you perceive what you're looking at, but also the knowledge with the children too, that you can do this as you're working on your drawing with pencil or pen or whatever. You can experiment with how hard or soft you draw, or even like when you put images back to back, like how you have your spread with the flags, and then you turn the page and it becomes very, very hard line because of the blacksmithing going on.
Yeah. Again, a change in graphics.
Exactly.
You know, it's a blacksmith. She's banging away at metal that's been in a furnace that, you know, and the glowing furnace and the hard metal, the black, I don't know, what do they call that? When they put the metal in and it comes out, and then when they bang it, like there's the red glowing part, but there's that black, is it called slag?
Slag, yeah.
The black stuff that comes off it.
Because isn't hitting it called smelting it? Am I wrong about that?
Smelting, I might be wrong. Yeah, is something.
That's something. Yeah, but the slag that comes off, yeah.
But yeah, thank you. Yeah, so like, and it's fun to think about those things and how they, and I love playing with the space and distorting the way things are, you know. One senior looking inside a building and the other one, like, you know, things are flopped and flattened and, you know, almost like a cubist kind of mentality in a way that I could tell the story better, you know? Yeah. You know, the things are just kind of laid out in the blacksmith's workshop, you know, so that you can see the different things that she's worked on and everything. And it's just so much fun. And when you were mentioning the first town that they go to where they trade the two teacups. When I was drawing all those people, like you said, it was not, like, I love doing that. And I love, like, as I'm drawing that person, I'm coming up with like a backstory.
Oh,
like, I don't necessarily remember all of them right now, but as I'm drawing them, like there's one lady that's resting on a pillow, looking out the window. I'm like, oh, she's there every day, and she knows everything that goes on in town. And, you know,
because this is there. Why there's a pillow, because her arms
are rested there. Yeah. And, you know, and this guy's there, and he's trying to write, and, you know, and everything. And just, it's just so much fun.
Oh, gosh, I love that so much. Okay, it's time to talk about your details. Because I know we won't be giving it away. It's just more of the excitement, I think, when I see it.
Dimension two, and I don't want to forget, so go ahead.
So first off, the very first thing the very first detail that greeted me in your book, the very first, like, even from the cover image, was that you have a child protagonist, you have a boy main character who has a peg leg.
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen that before. You created an image that I've never pictured before. I loved that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Just from drawing him, I was like, I was, of course, thinking, oh, I'll give the main guy a peg leg. It's so funny because my characters never have names.
Not even to you. That, like, I love that.
People ask me, what's the boy's name? I'm like, I don't know. So anyway, but yeah, so just drawing him, I was like, oh, I'll give him a peg leg. And I didn't really think about it as, like, you know, a thing, but then as we started making him like so capable, and so like he's really leading the whole adventure, and you know, without him there wouldn't be a story. It became this great empowering thing where, you know, we're not really talking about it, but he's got this thing, but he still does what he needs to do, you know. And he's
right, it's not strong. A book about disability and overcoming disability, right. It's just it's a fact that it's a character trait,
right,
that this
exactly.
kid lives
you know?
With
and yeah. we all have those things, you know, that we have to overcome, and that's what you do, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think that was a great fun thing, you know, to do.
Well, I speaking of
a stronger character.
No, I think that quality, absolutely. It's something that sort of then works in your subconscious, and you just see also that not only do you see the child walking around and carrying all these things and has this peg leg, but you also see the child leading yeah. the adult from.
Yeah, I always love that.
He's bent over. You have that great shape of him sort of bent over, almost like an upside down J, just leaning all the way over in the beginning. But but you just see him straighten up as he goes through and become happier. And all the while, he's never stepping in front of the child. It's just, well, this kid swapped well for me already. Let's just see how it goes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I just love that. I love, you know, we realized in Dragon that the little boy is like all alone. Like his parents, he goes through the whole city alone. There's no parents. So in Monster, her parents are actually in the background of most of that. But, you know, and the same kind of thing with this story, like, I don't know, you know, what they're friends, you know, and that's the most important thing. But, it always just makes me think of, Maurice Sendak's Pierre. No, not Pierre. One was Johnny. Sorry. They're all part of Nutshell. One was Johnny, and then he lived by himself. And as a kid, I was always like, how does this kid get to live by himself? That's so cool. And he has all these like, people come in, and it's like, that's so cool. And then he's like so strong, and he tells them to get out. Like, I was always like fascinated with that story. So I like always think of that, with these child characters that I have that are running around on their own. Like we used to do.
Like we used to do. That's right.
In the good old days.
Well, in the good old days, you have in Have You Seen My Dragon? Part of the game in that book is not only counting along as we go page by page, but also looking for the dragon, right?
Yeah.
In this book, you've got this, and in Monster too, but in this book, in Swap, you've got a character that is present on every page and even colored. So not even like hidden in the black and white the way that Monster and Dragon were. But what you do with the monkey in this story is really, really fun. And something I've seen kids pick up on. I'm sure that it was intentional to have you work with preschool kids. I know that that's a thing for you. You are the author and have the power to make kids feel discovery.
Thanks.
And that's cool.
Yeah, I want, you know, I always like my books. I mean, it's a pretty simple story, you know, so you read it the first time and, you know, it's, oh, they swap things and they fix their ship. And then hopefully the second time, you know, you're like, oh, wow, they went all these different places. And, you know, you might notice about the boy and different things. And then, you know, second or third time, you'll hopefully notice the monkey. And the monkey is foreshadowing everything that they've traded, that they're going to trade. So when he's in the bazaar and he's playing with a button on the awning, the next thing they trade is the button. And then, when they're trading for ropes and he's in the thing with some oars, the next thing they trade is oars. Yeah. So it goes on like that. So you can kind of look to the monkey to know what the next thing they trade is. Originally, the story was going to be that the monkey actually knew where to go for the next thing, and he was leading them. But the story got too complicated to tell it that way, and there was also going to be a treasure hidden through. Like, my books get really complicated, and thank God I have such a wonderful art director and editor who would say, well, maybe we could just do two of those things instead of 10, you know? And so there was going to be this whole treasure that you could find, and that was going to be in the end page, and it really got way too complicated. I mean, I was making coins out of wood, and each coin I have to find those because I have to bring those just to show when I talk about the swap. But each coin had a code, and the coins all lined up together. So if you matched, you know, this symbol with that symbol, that coin went next to each other, and they all lined up, and then that made a big map. But to illustrate that is like impossible, like, you know, and especially the age that we're trying to tell a story to. So thank goodness it was just like, okay, maybe that's a little too much. So, but that's why at the end the monkey is drawing the route where they went, because originally he knew beforehand kind of where they were going, which he still kind of does. He's foreshadowing that, you know. So it's just fun to have those other characters in there kind of giving another layer to it. You know, and the mermaid's in there. She's just kind of like, I consider her their friend, you know, and they get a mermaid figurehead, which is really nice because most kids don't know what a figurehead is. So I love reading the book and explaining that a figurehead are these symbols of, you know, animals or women that go on the front of ships and everything. And just the other day I was reading it and a little girl goes, and they could be eagles too. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. They could be eagles too. So it's just a fun book. And you know, yeah, it's funny like how crazy I get with the ideas, but that's like the fun part for me when I'm working on a book, is just like, let myself go like crazy. Like, there's so much potential. It's like, okay, now I have this idea that they're going to go and trade stuff. Like, what else could we do? And where can we go? And what can it be? And I just kind of like I said, I have like 10 things that I want to cram in the book. And it usually, you know, my art director and editor kind of go, oh, these two are really good. Let's work on those and make that, you know, the story. So,
crazy though. Well, yeah. For as wild as you went with the ideas, I actually felt like all of the swaps actually made a whole lot of sense to me. I never thought like, yeah, right, who would trade a button for a whatever?
Well, yeah, but that was the thing too. Yeah.
All along I thought like, no, that actually makes sense, because it ends up being like you so eloquently put it in the very beginning of our conversation. It really is, what value do you personally place on whatever the item is? Maybe you don't need all these sails, but what you really need is this other thing, because you want these. You really need these anchors because of the way it'll be able to help you spool all the thread.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of playing with, well, what's valuable to me might have even greater value to you, was really fun. And I wanted to say just one more thing about the monkey before we moved on, that I found, now that I have a 5-year-old and he's starting to read, I find those sort of nods really helpful, because then it's sort of you giving a little hint about what comes next, so that he can help tell the story better. If he knows that the monkey's there, then it becomes, oh yeah. And then the next thing they swap for is, which I think, again, there's all these things. I admire you for being a preschool teacher.
Oh, thanks.
But I see your preschool teacher qualities come out in your art because of the way that you honor children through the way you tell stories, the way you tell the story alongside them.
Yeah, you know, I respect the children so much, and it's like, teachers come to me like, oh, you have such a good rapport with the kids. Like, how do you, you know, I haven't connected with this kid or that kid. And I'm like, well, when's the last time you just let them talk and just listen to them? Like, kids come in and they talk to me and I just let them, and no one really listens to kids, because kids, you know, the parents are busy, you know, come on, we got to get here, we got to get there and everything, you know, and, you know, so no one, and so if you just give them those few minutes to just talk to you. And, you know, and it's usually about, you know, they saw some movie, or they, you know, did this, you know, over the weekend or something, or they're all excited about, you know, a play date or something. But if you really, they know when you're really listening to them. And so if you give them that respect, you get that bond. And then when you ask them, they trust you. And then when you ask them to go to do something, you know, they trust you to go, you know, to listen to you. And so I kind of feel it's the same way with a picture book. Like, hopefully, you know, look, I put all this into this book, so, you know, hopefully you trusted enough to come along on this journey with me, you know, and everything. So, hopefully they're picking up on that.
I would imagine they would be. And you continue to talk to them that way with your upcoming book that you have. We were talking before recording, but I feel so grateful that I have an advanced copy of Lucky Laszlo.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like to be able to talk to children about love and about wanting to do a good thing for someone you really care about, and to just
So Lucky Laszlo is really my form of a love story. But I, for the longest time, I've wanted to do a story about the behind the scenes of a theater and all, you know, like all the people that work to get the actors on stage. You know, they're like the unsung heroes, you know, or all the people that are, you know, the same with like movies and so, you know, all those behind the scenes people. So it started out that way, but it really became a love story about a little boy trying to get a rose to a little girl who's in the play at the theater, and the play happens to be Alice in Wonderland, and she's playing Alice, but a cat steals the rose and runs through it. So it was originally, and there's many pages that didn't, that got taken out because we kind of changed the story, because what happened was it was mostly just him chasing the cat and the different people that did the different jobs behind the scenes.
Mm.
And as I was drawing, I was, you know, researching theaters and everything, and I was, it became fascinating with like all the superstitions in theaters, like break a leg and, you know, you shouldn't have a mirror on stage, and you know, peacock feathers or bad luck, yes, or good luck, yes, depending, you know, it's like all these different things. It depends on the theater sometimes, whether it's good luck or bad luck. So I was like, oh, that'll be great. You know, I love to do that. I'll hide the superstitions in the background. So when I delivered the final art to what was really a different story than you're looking at now, I said, but I'd love to have an author's note of all these superstitions that I hid in the back. And my art director and I were like, oh my God, this is great. But really the story needs to focus more on that now. You know, the superstitions are really the front idea now, you know, with the love story. So we kind of did a lot of editing, and there's actually some digital trickery that they do. I mean, all my work is just hand drawn. You know, I don't do anything on the computer. But when I sent it to them, they were like, well, if we just, you know, move this character from that page to this page, we can do it digitally. And, you know, so there's a few little things like that digitally, to kind of make the story work more with the superstitions. And it just became this whole other amazing story that I'm so proud of. And so it was just so much fun. I mean, because I'm designing the theater, which is called the Peacock Theater. And then, so I'm designing like all the, you know, the cushions and all of the whole sets. Then I'm designing the sets for the play, because it's Alice. And then I'm getting to do Alice in Wonderland basically, but as a theater production. And then I'm also designing all the characters in the book, you know? So it was like all these things. So for me, I love that, because it's like, oh my God, I get to do all this stuff, you know? And it was just so much fun, because I got to, you know, put all these different Alice in Wonderland characters in the back scenes and stuff, and plus the people working on the sets. And then I started to introduce William Morris patterns for the sets and for the theater curtains and like wallpaper and the decorations and stuff of the theater. And he's just amazing and does this amazing work. So it's like my take on William Morris, you know. And it just came out really great, and I'm just so proud of it.
Yeah, I would say for people listening who, well, this comes out in December, right?
Yeah, so it comes in December.
A little while to wait. But
that's just a little teaser.
But you'll see it.
Oh my God, what is he talking about?
No, but you'll see it at a library conference, or they'll start to see images of it.
Yeah.
But I'm just gonna call it, because you know I'm a fan. Your line work on this is insane. It's crazy, yeah, so Steve.
That's a whole nother pen and a little bit different line. It's still limited color, but some pages have almost full color in this book. So we're kind of like, you know, getting in there. But like when you see something on stage from the audience point of view, whatever's on stage is full color, because it's, you know, theater is even more real than life, you know, kind of thing. And then the backstage stuff is mostly black and white, with, you know, the characters being in color and little spots to tell the story. I love using the color to tell the story. It's so much fun. Anyway, so the line work, though, is an even bigger, thicker, scraggly line, and this really thin detailed
the
line.
The detail, right? Yeah, the really, yeah, really thick. It's like, yeah, yeah, so it's like fuzzy like, lines. Yeah, yeah.
Thick line around, like, on the set of a tree, you know, so it's a set of a tree. So it's really a wood cut out of a tree. So there's this big thick line. And then inside is this thin line drawing these William Morris kind of leaves and patterns and stuff. And then it was so much fun. So that that nib was designed specifically for this book and for me by the great Richard Binder, who has since retired. He still does some little things here and there, but he's really retired. But we're good friends, so he did these nibs, and he calls it a – I'm not going to say it right. He's probably going to get upset, but Han Fude nib. So H-A-N-E and then F-U-D-E. So the Japanese make these F-U-D-E, Fude nibs that are bent, but they're bent at a really strong angle, so they give you this kind of brush stroke. So his is only like a half one for me, where it's just bent slightly, and so that I can control how thick and thin the line is, and then if I flip it, I can get that really thin line. So it's just like a fantastic like thing that this nib was created when I was thinking of these drawings, and I got to use it for this book, and it's just so much fun, and
that's marvelous.
It's really fun. So I'm doing a little pen and ink thing. I'm going to the Tucson, Arizona Book Festival on Friday, and
you will have already been there. They will have loved your visit.
Sorry, and
no.
I'm doing a little pen and ink thing for adults, so I'll actually have that pen and can actually show them with a projection and stuff, Elmo thing, where I can actually draw with it and show them how it works and stuff. So that's pretty exciting. So.
The image, the spread in this, there's always something in your books that stops me, but the spread that stopped me in my tracks was the cat jumping through the orchestra and the conductor with his hands in the air. And what specifically stopped me was staring at all the expressions on the faces. I looked at single one, Steve. It was
thanks. Oh, you know, I started to run out of people to draw. I was trying to think so I actually, what I did is I downloaded old like 1950s or 60s yearbook pages from the internet just so I could go, oh yeah, okay, you know, I'll that his kind of ears,
that's terrific.
So I could have them on the wall to like make it go a little smoother, like for me to just like go, oh yeah, that guy kind of looks like so and so, you know, or the guy that sold me a slice of pizza, I'll put him in the front row, you know, kind of thing. So it's funny the things that make your ideas click and your drawings click. But that was a crazy page to draw, but a lot of fun, because it was just like, okay, this cat is jumping out basically into the audience or so. And then like one guy is just kind of like, oh, whatever. And, you know, one lady's like really surprised and stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
You have Swap is out now and Lucky Laszlo is coming out in December. And Steve, you're just a wonder, man. You're amazing. I'm so thankful that we get to talk and that I get to see this great art that you're doing and then have the great privilege of putting it in front of children.
Thank you.
It's an amazing thing.
That's the greatest joy, is when I see a kid reading my book, or, you know, someone sends me a photo, or, you know, a kid will come to a book signing and like know the book and like, you know, point out something or ask me a question about it. I'm like, oh, you know, that's just the greatest joy and the greatest gift, you know, to be able to do that and have that place in a child's life is really amazing.
Well, I sent this to you in an email, and I want to preface this because you're the first person I have ever asked this closing question to. But I've wanted for a while to reframe how I end this podcast, because as much as I love talking about kickball, the thing I love talking about even more are the children that I get to see every day. So I'm going to ask you the question, and I'm just going to end on your response, Steve. So.
Okay.
I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message would you like me to bring them from you?
I would say to find the things that make you happy and to do them no matter what anyone else says or tries to stop you, and to be true to yourself no matter who that is, and not let anyone take the joy that you have in life from you.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. And check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and the Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Faith Erin Hicks joins me to talk about The Nameless City, her brand new graphic novel. And after that, Peter Brown makes his debut on this podcast to share the story behind The Wild Robot, his debut middle grade novel. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.